We can get into the next item in the mindfulness for young adults session. So that's a short Dhamma sermon. And we were discussing Kayagata Sati Sutta. I am going to share the content. So Kayagata Sati Sutta, as you can see, is available in Majjhima Nikaya. Actually, this is the next sutta after the Anapana Sati Sutta. So this is also very relevant to our practice, and Buddha teaching several techniques in order to develop mindfulness using the body, more related to the Kayanupassana. So that's why this Kayagata Sati means you are establishing mindfulness, being mindful about the body, various bodily activities, various bodily postures. So last time we discussed Anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing, which is more familiar to you now, and that is the main topic which we discuss in Anapanasati Sutta. That was the last sutta, last topic. And Kayagata Sutta actually starts with Anapanasati. So that is in a way the beauty where we can understand that this technique is well recognized and widely used, and there are many suttas related to mindfulness on breathing, and there is a separate section in Sanyutta Nikaya called Anapanasati Sanyutta, where they have collected many suttas Buddha explained with respect to mindfulness on breathing. And last time we discussed mindfulness on breathing, I'll just summarize it. So one has to find a suitable place and has to prepare the posture and has to establish your attention at nostril. So this is the sort of the prerequisite for Anapanasati or mindfulness on breathing, because at the beginning having this best possible posture is quite useful, because breathing is kind of a natural process happening involuntary in our body, and when we have the best facilitated breathing, when we have the smooth or seamless breathing, then it is quite convenient for us to continue our practice. So say for example, if you are in a bent posture, if you are in another awkward posture, so then it would be difficult to continue Anapanasati, because you are complete duct of this air movement has to be very clear. There are no any obstacles for breathing. So that's why Buddha recommends this erect posture, and if possible one may sit cross-legged and keeping head straight with closing eyes, and one may be of course in a very silent place. And Buddha starts with very simple instruction to be aware of in-breath and to be aware of out-breath. Mindfully breathing in, mindfully breathing out. So once that is established, that means so the ongoing breathing is there and well-established mindfulness is there. So when in-breath happens, you are knowing this is in-breath. When out-breath happens, you know this is out-breath. Next in-breath, you know this is in-breath. Next out-breath, you know this is the out-breath. So likewise, not missing any breaths. Now you can well in sync with the physical breathing, and that actually assures that now your mindfulness is well established. So once the mindfulness is well established, then Buddha doesn't stop there. So rather he asks us to find out very subtle differences between say the in-breath and out-breath. Whether in-breath happens in one nostril, out-breath happens in another nostril, or are they happening both in the same nostril, or in-breath cooler, out-breath warmer. So likewise, there are maybe minor differences. So if we can recognize them, that is another step where we can improve our clear comprehension, sampajanya. And once we can achieve it in a way, so we can further refine our mindfulness by seeing two consecutive in-breaths. Typically, we can imagine, we can think all in-breaths are similar and all out-breaths are similar. But if we examine very carefully, there may be minor differences. compared to the previous in-breath, this in-breath, present in-breath, current in-breath could be longer. Compared to the previous out-breath, current out-breath may be longer. So likewise, compared to the previous in-breath, current in-breath may be shorter. Compared to the previous out-breath, current out-breath may be shorter. So likewise, these differences are there. So more and more, we can try to recognize this information. So some similar fashion is common to other practices as well. So first you establish your attention, first you establish your mindfulness, and once it is well established, then you are trying to figure out minor details. Then Buddha goes on explaining various benefits, and one important benefit is that so this kind of practice basically avoids or reduces various distractions. Mindfulness of breathing is especially very good for calming down the mind, very good for reducing our distractions, very good for reducing obsessive thinking. So therefore it is well recommended to minimize unnecessary thinking, obsessive thinking, vitakka, and having a silent mind. So as a result, your complete attention comes to the body, and all the typical sensual world related thoughts start to disappear. Now we can understand, these are not difficult to understand, that if we watch our mind, there are so much of various thoughts, maybe thoughts related to the past, how you spent your life, what are the difficulties you encounter, what are the good opportunities you had, what were the favorable situations, what people you associated, so many things. And today and tomorrow and another week, another year, so we have various plans. So all related to the sensual world, all related to our family life, all related to our occupation, all related to our country, whatever it is. All are actually related to the sensual world. So those are called gehasita sarasankappa. So whatever is based on the household life. But when you pay your attention very carefully or very precisely on breath, so that household thoughts starts to disappear. Now mind likes to stay within the body. So that's the difference. So mind now just staying in the body, very quiet, and it's very much like unified with the body and well concentrated. Ajjattameva chittam santitthati, sannisiddhati, ekodhi hoti, samadhiyati. So in Kayanupassana, the one first result is this. So basically, completely distracted mind now coming and getting concentrated to the body. So this is one action. So again and again you do this process, so your mind get concentrated, well established within the body, maybe observing something, maybe anapanasati, maybe observing various other things that we can discuss later. So likewise, body appears like a anchor for the mind. Assume that mind is like a ship or boat which has no refuge. As a result, it is sort of moving here and there. So without having any proper sitting, any proper still position, firm position. Now, if you have a good anchor, heavy anchor, powerful anchor, then you can have it, you can keep it, so that the boat may not waver, boat may not shift from its present position. Now, similarly, the mind also is shifting. Mind also is distracting because it is not happy internally. So it always has the presumption that the happiness is available outside. So you're always going out. But here, as a result of this practice, mind recognizes being inside or being with the breath is a pleasant abiding. It has no any restriction. It has no any resistance. It has no any burning. It has no any defilements, so soothing, so sort of pleasant. So once mind recognizes that, so then one may neglect all other distractive thoughts and come back to the body. So body appear like an anchoring point for the mind. Now we can discuss the next point, next kamatahana, that is the four postures. So in the previous section we were keeping breathing as a sort of anchor for the mind. In here, in the four postures, we are using various postures for this anchoring point. Say, as all human beings, we have main four postures: standing posture, sitting posture, walking posture, and lying down posture. So those are the four main postures we can start with. And while walking, so I know that I am walking. While standing, I know I am standing. While sitting, I know I am sitting. While lying down, I know I am lying down. But this is just the beginning. And it has an I component. That is a kind of a self-view involved there. And again, I am considering the whole body as one unit. So likewise, there are certain amount of ignorance involved here. But this is where we have to begin. Later, we can further refine. And the posture can be used to establish mindfulness. And as I said, it becomes the anchor for the mind. So once it is well established, we can refine our understanding. Actually, Buddha went on to add other various postures, because as you can see from the number 5, where the number 1, 2, 3, 4 are actually the four main postures, and he include all the other minor postures using number 5. Yatha yathava panasakayo panihito hoti tatha tathanam pajanati. So whatever it is, the body sort of get into any sort of other minor postures, one can recognize that. So probably you can understand one of a beautiful incident happened during the after the passing away of the Buddha. You know, Buddha's main attendant was Venerable Ananda. Because of lot of responsibilities he have to hold, he couldn't become an arahant while Buddha was alive. But he was a sotapanna. And he actually is the foremost in protecting the Dhamma. He is actually the Dhamma treasurer, Dhamma bandagarika. So, but anyway, he couldn't go beyond sotapanna. But now, after the passing away of the Buddha, now other arahants decided to have a council, Sanghayana. But Venerable Ananda was one of the essential characters for this. Venerable Mahakasapa was there to lead the position, and Venerable Ananda has to be there to continue the sutta aspect. So he's the one who knows the Dhamma. And Venerable Upali was there to continue the Vinaya. But the other whole 499 monks were arahants, but Ananda was not. And he, on the previous day, he attained arahantship not in the main postures, but in a different posture, in between kind of a posture. So while being there, he was mindful and he was able to attain arahantship. So these postures, therefore, are possible, very easy, ordinary experiences. While walking, we can be aware of walking rather than thinking on various other things. So one can be aware of walking. While standing, rather than looking around and getting distracted, one can be fully aware of this standing posture. While sitting, rather than distracting ourselves in watching TV or reading newspapers and blah blah things, so you can be aware of the sitting posture. So this is actually very straightforward in a way. So establishing oneself on the posture in a way is even easier than Anapanasati, because you know it's a posture, the sitting posture. You are like a pyramid, like an ant hill. So it is well established, kind of still position. So once the mind is fairly concentrated to the posture, then you can recognize what are the various processes available, physical processes available. And if you are able to recognize anapanasati, well and good, you can continue in that. If you are able to recognize rising and falling, good, you can continue in that. So posture can be in a way an entry point. So I can remember Venerable Analeo has mentioned in one of his books where he was analyzing our Theravada canon and the Mahayana canon. So there he has mentioned in Mahayana canon, before the Anapanasati they have put postures. Say in the Satipatthana Sutta, in our canon we have the Anapanasati as the first Kamatahana, and in Mahayana canon they have postures as the first, and next is the Anapanasati. So likewise, postures are also a good entry point to establish mindfulness. And Buddha includes all the other secondary postures in number 5, telling yogi understands whatever it is the posture, so I am aware of that. And then the results are very similar. I mean, it is the same results Buddha here mentioned in each section. So whatever is this worldly household thinking, so that going to disappear, that going to be reduced, and your mind is well established, concentrated, and brought to singleness with the body. So body again, you can see operating like an anchor. Now mind being somewhat collected inside the body, inside the posture. And you are aware, okay, now I am in a sitting posture, now I am in a walking posture, now I am in a standing posture, now I am in a lying down posture. That kind of a understanding is there, that kind of an awareness is there. You are not lost in something else, but rather you are awakened to the posture. Posture being a very ordinary experience, we typically neglect it. But one can use it effectively to establish mindfulness. Actually, Mahathero Bhante Dhammajiva used to start most of the sessions telling, here now I am. So here now I am refers this posture. So once you are sitting, you can say, okay, here now I am sitting. While walking, one can say, here now I am walking. When standing, one can say, here now I am standing. So likewise, you can use postures to establish mindfulness. But as you continue, you don't need to maintain this I component. You don't need to think this is I or me or mine. But rather, you can recognize the feelings available in the posture. Various element characteristics available in the posture. So likewise, the posture can evolve to another section, another kamatahana. But posture can, of course, can be used as an entry point. And then we can get into the next section, clear comprehension, full awareness. So that is the next section Buddha explains in this Kayagatasati Sutta. So now, so far we discuss Anapanasati, mindfulness on breathing. And today we discuss mindfulness on various postures. And now we are going to discuss various other activities. Say for example, now if you go through the list, acts in full awareness when going forward and returning. So you have the sort of the orientation. You know, now I am going towards the front. Now you know I am coming back. Then when you are looking ahead, you know, looking ahead, I am looking the sides. Say, when any of the limbs are being flexing or extending, so you know, say you are flexing the leg, you are flexing the arm, so you know that. And then now this is actually related to the monks wearing robes, so it can be applicable to lay people. I mean, suppose you are wearing a cloth, you are wearing a shirt, where you are wearing a sari, where you are wearing a frock, whatever it is. So this can be applied. So without distracting yourself with various other things, when you are wearing any kind of a cloth, you can aware how you are taking your cloth and how you are putting to the body and whatever it is, the buttons that you need to fix that you are going through it. So likewise, all the wearing process can be done mindfully. And then we can get into the number 5, is telling be aware while eating, while drinking, while swallowing, while tasting. So all this can be included. So you can understand in a way, it is not that the sitting posture and walking posture are the only possible postures for meditation, but rather you can improve mindfulness if you are very clever by using various other activities as well. So in day-to-day activities, so we have to be very skillful how to utilize them in order to introduce or in order to improve our mindfulness. It is not possible for us to every day sitting and walking throughout the day, but rather while engaged with various other activities, we can utilize those activities to improve our mindfulness. So this is where we need to be a little clever to find out how to introduce mindfulness to an ordinary activity. Say for example, you are having a bath. Can you have a bath mindfully? I can remember in Satipasara, there was a little video being prepared. A little kid is bathing mindfully. So he is going to the bathroom and opening the shower and maybe going under the shower. Now water is coming, drizzling, and now he can feel the cold, the coolness of the water. Now you can feel that the water being go through the whole body. Now different sensations are there, kind of comfort feeling is there, you are being sort of calmed down, cooled down, so the body temperature reduces. And then suppose you stop and then you apply soap, so what is the sensation to your hand when you are holding soap? So likewise, you can have a bath very mindfully, and after having soaps, applying soap, suppose now you are again bathing, again you feel refreshed. So likewise, the whole bathing process can be done mindfully. And while eating, you can be mindful. So you are taking various parts from various vegetables, curries, and you are mixing up with rice, and then you are taking one bite by bite. So, and you are chewing, you feel the taste, then you are swallowing. So all of these activities can be done mindfully. And Buddha mentioned in number 6, while defecating, while urinating, one can be mindful. While standing, walking, sitting, falling asleep, when you are waking, when you are talking, when you are listening. So everywhere we can be mindful. So you can see now Buddha is expanding mindfulness. It is not that we have to limit our mindfulness only to a very selected postures or only to a very selected activities, but we can expand mindfulness to all activities, to every activity. From the very moment that we wake up, there are so many activities we get involved with, and those activities, it's a matter of introducing mindfulness. We have to do all these activities, but now with mindfulness. So you are introducing mindfulness to that activity, and now you are engaging that activity mindfully. So that's the point. So this is where kind of an urgency comes, has to come from you. You need to understand, okay, I mean, just sitting and standing or whatever, walking is not enough to have continuous mindfulness. Now you need to find out, where am I losing my mindfulness? I am trying my best to improve mindfulness while walking. I am trying my best to improve my mindfulness while sitting. How about the other activities? Am I engaged with them in mindfully? Or I am completely lost while talking with another person? Say for example, assume that you are having a conversation, a dialogue with someone. So are you completely lost in the dialogue, or are you able to establish mindfulness while engaged in the dialogue? This is something you can look at. Say you are traveling by a bus. Are you completely in a planning session while you are traveling? Or are you aware of the situation? The sitting position, maybe. Who else is around you? So you have kind of a expanded type of mindfulness. You have a kind of an overview kind of mindfulness. So that is another aspect of mindfulness. So then the similar benefits are mentioned here also. So if more and more you are being mindful of various activities, day-to-day activities, and you are assume that you are capable of seeing even the minor details of those activities, and that means your mind is not distracted, because all these activities are related to the body and you are paying more and more attention related to the body through these activities. Activities are in a way the pathway to get on to this body. So activities are the external factor opening to connect with the body. So you are mindfully eating, you are brushing teeth mindfully, say you are walking mindfully, you are standing mindfully, urinating mindfully, defecating mindfully, consuming food mindfully. So likewise, now all the body related activities you do mindfully, as a result your attention being somewhat focused towards the body. So that's why Buddha is mentioning, so all the other typical household thinking is now reduced, but you are very much like coming back home. So after a long sort of a travel, so now the mind has found a home, kind of a pleasant abiding, because the typical bodily activities are not that charming or interesting, but they are very neutral. Because of this neutral activities, so mind has less burning. When it is going outside, there are a lot of pitfalls, there are a lot of burning effects. But now when it is with the body, there are less activities, and those are extremely neutral. And actually there are many activities and they are quite neutral. And as a result, mind finds kind of a place to stay comfortably, free from any friction. So this is the kind of a least frictional component, least frictional staying for the mind, just being with the body. So therefore, less distraction to the mind. And again, as a result, mind calms down, mind becomes still, inner chatter reduced, and mind is now concentrated. So very much like mind well synchronized with the body, and now staying with the body, very much like keeping a chair and keeping on a chair and looking after it, something like that. So mind doesn't want to go out because it has found a very suitable, very pleasant, very comfortable place to stay. So that's how the continuous practice, especially the day-to-day activities, helping us to bring our attention to the body. And I think that is enough for today. So if you have any question related to today's session, or if you already got any written questions related to the practice, now we can open the session for questions.
Mr. Raibante, yeah. There are currently 6 questions today.
Yeah.
Question number 1, this is walking mindfulness. Dear Bante, when I start the walking practice, I focus on the sole of my feet and note left and right when I feel the touch sensations. Within a few minutes, the mind settles and I can observe various sensations separately, such as how the pressure transmits on the sole, hot and cold nature, texture, etc., and the differences between the left and right foot. After about 10 minutes, these observations start to bleach and become murky. I can still feel the touch of the foot on the ground, but cannot discern much information and differences now. By this time, random thoughts start to flow in, and I try not to get distracted by them, but to be mindful that they are thoughts. Sometimes I focus back on the sole of the foot to check if I can feel the previous sensations. At this point, which may be after 30 minutes into the practice, I can observe the previous descriptive sensations more or less as thoughts, which I can drop similar to the fleeting random thoughts. If I do that, I can still observe the observations, but feel like I cannot describe them anymore using words. seems like the identification part of the sensations that I'm having got dropped. If I try to identify what I am observing with effort, I can observe how the weight is transferring from the heel to the toes, the cold and hot nature on the sole, the non-sensation parts of the midsole, etc. I can still feel them without naming as well, which is a bit weird. Maybe Bhante can explain the scenario a bit if this is a normal situation. Much merits for your valuable guidance. That's the end.
Yeah, this is a normal situation. Actually, if I take you back to Anapanasati, say at the beginning you simply establish your mindfulness on breathing, and then you are trying to figure out minute details, say whether it is long, whether it is short. So likewise, now you are improving your attention, improving your clear comprehension. And then when you are trying to see the beginning, middle and the end, so that indicates that you are now going further into more subtle details. But what happens after that? After that, basically the breathing starts to calm down. The whole breathing starts to very much like becoming subtler and subtler. So if we misinterpret thinking that our mindfulness is reducing, our concentration is reducing, then that is a wrong interpretation. But rather this whole breathing cycle or the breathing process starts to refine, and now we are observing this very refined, subtle breathing with mindfulness. So as you can see, in order to know very refined process, you need to have very refined mindfulness, very precise mindfulness. But if the things are quite rough, then you can actually understand that even using a sort of minor kind of mindfulness. So similarly, you can see while in walking, so you can recognize various roughness, hardness and all those element characteristics at the beginning. But as you continue a practice, so the location information being lost and your orientation sometimes being lost, so you don't know where you are. But what you know is simply element characteristics. So all those typical conventional conceptual information is now losing, but your attention is well focused only to the that very minute and very fundamental primary details, primary element characteristics. So that is where it is going forward, and ultimately that also disappears. And now you can't figure out whether it is hardness or softness or whether it is light or weight or what heaviness, because everything appear like very similar. Now it's very much like a flux. So at that time you it is not necessary to forcefully figure out whether it is left leg go, right leg go, like that. So then you are sort of hindering the process. Rather, when it is evolving properly, so in the first cycle you are getting more and more detail, subtle detail, and after that, so those details start to disappear and they become blur, and everything appears like a flux. So now you are talking that stage, how this evolvement happened. So this is a kind of a natural phenomena. More and more you are watching something, so it's sort of interest being lost and the boundary becoming sort of blurred. So that kind of a change happens because of the observation, and it is common to everywhere. Assume that you are watching Vedana, feelings. Say you recognize, okay, this is a pleasurable feeling, this is a painful feeling, this is a neutral feeling. So you are capable of recognizing that. Assume that after that, you are capable of seeing more detail. It is not a single pleasurable feeling, it's a collection of minute pleasurable feelings. It is not a single pain, but a collection of minute painful feelings. It is not a single neutral feeling, but it's rather an accumulation of minute neutral feelings. That is another level. But after that, Now you can't recognize whether it is, say, neutral or pleasurable or painful, but rather everything appears like very similar. Some sensation is there, some feeling is there, very much like the same taste, same tone. So this is how it is evolving everywhere. So this is very common phenomenon available in practice. So you continue your practice, and once you reach that area where everything appears like a flux, everything appears like lost interest, lost boundaries. So that is where the beginning of sort of a viraga, beginning of dispassion. So now you can't sort of hold it, because there is nothing interesting, nothing important. Everything is arising and passing away. So something like that. Say if you are to give another simile, it's very much like changing the channels in the TV. So in between you get the dots. So those dots are not interesting. I mean, probably you can try to find some interesting features in the dots, but very difficult. But rather we like to see a movie, fight or whatever it is. But in between we have this flux. So this flux is going to be not interested, so that mind slowly give it up. So this is the kind of a process, natural process happening in insight meditation.
Question number 2 of 6. This is sitting mindfulness. Venerable sir, I am trying sitting for 1 hour, practicing breathing mindfulness for some time now. Seems I cannot continue more than 25 to 30 minutes. My breathing process settles well and the mind is not distracted, but some uneasiness within me pushes me out of the meditation. It is not body pain or the pain of the posture. It is not distracted mind, as the breath settles in nicely. It is not any specific thought. It is not sleepiness, as I'm pretty alert during this time. It is not any mystic thing or a ghost that I'm afraid of. I cannot describe that uneasiness which creeps out and puts me out of the meditation to open the eyes. I am thinking of continuing without opening eyes, whatever happens, until the bell rings indicating 1 hour. Appreciate Bhante's advice with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, so this kind of uncomfortable situation may be a common thing, that when we are reaching to some extent, so this sort of urge coming in internally, asking us to, okay, this is enough, better get up, better go to the walking, what's the time now? So you open your eyes and look at the clock. So this kind of an urge is there. So these are sort of common to everyone. So when our meditation become boring, not eventful, because our mind likes some eventful situation, but the meditation takes us to kind of a very boring, monotonous kind of a situation, at that time mind can't bear it. So it, because not enough resources for the mind to sustain, it requires kind of an interesting phenomenon to happen to establish the mind, especially the consciousness. So as a result, now it is suggesting you to get up, open the eyes, look at something, go for something interesting, watch a movie, hear some music. So various kind of suggestions are there. So, I mean, we can't immediately deny all these suggestions and continue the practice. So that is, if possible, that is all right. But on the other hand, we have to go slowly. Say today you sit 30 minutes, tomorrow you sit 31 minutes. Maybe day after tomorrow, maybe 32 minutes. Next day, say 35 minutes. So likewise, slowly you have to expand the capacity. So therefore, don't take it too serious, because if you take it too serious and if you are expecting, okay, is this going to happen again, that bad situation going to happen again, so then you are sort of preparing the conditions for that bad condition, for that kind of a wrong urge or bad urge, which you are sort of not comfortable with. Rather, you start your session with a very open attitude, with a beginner's mind. Whatever it is coming, I am ready to accept. So again, suppose you are reaching some, you are continuing your practice at one extent, at one point, this urge again comes. So you, one, another option is you can look at that urge. Actually, you have done that. You are sort of paying attention to that urge. What really is that? And why mind is asking like that? So maybe, as I mentioned, because that the ongoing process is not interesting, very boring, not eventful. But as you continue your practice, more and more you are being familiar with this boredom. You can be with the boredom without refusing it and not expecting any kind of eventful situation. Rather, you like just be. So we actually, as human beings, we always want to do something, but now that there is less doing. We are simply accommodating whatever is happening. So it is difficult to orient to the mind immediately. So that's why mind is suggesting you to get up. So you bear it for some time and then get up. Next day again you bear it for some time, then get up. So likewise, you have to slowly sort of familiarize to this situation, slowly train the mind to this situation, and then you actually get used to this. And then there's a situation where mind does not ask various tasks, does not want to do much, does not like to get engaged with various activities or various events. Rather, mind likes the seclusion. Mind starts to enjoy seclusion. Mind starts to be alone. It likes to be alone. So kind of a complete change of perspective happen. So at that time, nothing to worry. You can continue your practice. So till that, just bear it. Be patient.
Question number 3 of 8. This is sitting mindfulness. Venerable Bhante, during my sitting practice, I could focus well on the breath at the beginning and after the breath becomes subtle. Sometimes my mind would drift, occasionally for a long period of time. But when I returned to focus on the breath, it would still be subtle, and I would sometimes even feel sensations in the body. Is this possible? That's the end.
Can you repeat the last part, Chatu?
It's the last sentence. But when I returned to focus on the breath, it would still be subtle, and I would sometimes even feel sensations in the body. Is this possible?
Yeah, it is possible. That's why you felt it. So basically, everything is possible in meditation. So nothing is impossible. There was a movie, I think, I can remember, I was watching that as a child. Nothing impossible. Mission impossible. So meditation is also like a mission impossible. So you are going through various things. So many new experiences are happening daily. And now you are getting to the unknown. So previously the feelings were not known to you. Now once the mindfulness is refined, you are encountering various new experiences, new feelings. So that is a good. Actually, that indicates now the mind is expanding. Now the mindfulness is refined. So therefore, continue your practice. No need to doubt about the practice. No need to doubt about your experience. Yeah.
Question number 4 of 9. Sitting mindfulness. Dear Bhante, when I meditate, my breathing is very faint and I find it difficult to see the breathing in detail. But however, I can still concentrate on the faint breathing and no thoughts come to my mind and my body feels relaxed and it is a very pleasant, calm position. Could you please advise, since I am unable to see the details of breathing, if my meditation is in the correct path, or do I need to do anything to improve? Thank you with metta. That's the end.
Yeah, I think nothing to do in order to improve, but rather allow. Now you have mentioned very much like now thinking has stopped. you are simply observing. At that time, say breathing becomes subtle, almost like breathing stopped. So this is the typical procedure. This is how the breathing meditation evolves. At that time, you don't need to struggle in order to again pay attention to breathing. Rather, now breathing becomes very subtle. Just keep your attention at the nostril in case you are able to recognize breathing. That's fine, no problem. But if not, you can simply be. You can simply keep your attention at the nostril and you are simply waiting without agitating your mind. All these doubts actually helps to agitate the mind. So rather recognize this as a doubt. Now you are trying to logically think about the situation while meditating. So that is not good. Actually, you can analyze the situation after get up from your session. But while being in the session, you allow the thing to happen. You accept everything. You welcome everything. Rather than rejecting your experience, you simply welcome, okay, this is also fine. Another thing comes, so this is also fine, well and good. So likewise, when you have a very wide, open attitude, so it is quite easy to continue your practice. Yeah.
Question number 5 of 10. This is from the discussion. Question regarding posture, Niyapata discussion today. Once the posture is prominent in sitting practice and becomes a primary object in attention, can the movement of the posture or very subtle movements inside the posture come under the Iriyapata practice? That's the end.
Yeah, true. It can under the Iriyapata practice. So that's how, say for example, rising and falling. That is also coming under the Iriyapata practice, this postures, because once you are sitting, it appears like a still posture at the beginning. But more your attention being well established, as your clear comprehension improves, then you can see, even though the outer appearance appear like a still, kind of a stationary, but there are various internal processes. They are quite moving, dynamic. They are not that still. So therefore, rising and falling, everything. So, and as you said, the little movements of the body. So those actually include the minor postures. And therefore, as you clearly has recognized, so this movement can be considered still under the this postures or Iriyapata Pabba. Yeah.
Question number 6 of 10. This is from the discussion as well. Based on the discussion, it appears like clear comprehension or sampajanya can have a simple meaning of dynamic mindfulness. Is this a correct understanding, Bante? That's the end.
Dynamic mindfulness. Is that the correct?
Correct. Yeah, dynamic mindfulness.
Yeah. Rather than telling dynamic mindfulness, we can say once the mindfulness is established, now Buddha is taking our attention to the detail. So that is actually a part of the clear comprehension. And clear comprehension, we can say, is the kind of beginning of the wisdom. You know, if we consider the various, Bodhipakkhiya Dhamma, for Satipatthana, for Iddipada, for faculties, that is the Indriya, for Bala, and then Bodhjanga, Noble Eightfold Path. So likewise, Buddha has tabulated or clearly mentioned various spiritual qualities that we are developing. So there are clear comprehension actually contributes towards the wisdom. Towards the, what you call the Dhamma Vichaya, investigation. So you are able to examine a particular phenomena very clearly, with its minute detail, with some precision. So that is necessary. So therefore, rather than telling that this is what you have mentioned, what is the chatu that her
dynamic mindfulness.
Yeah, I mean, you can say it is quite dynamic, true, but more and more it is, you are trying to examine certain phenomena clearly. That helps to develop Dhamma Vichaya. That is another aspect of this practice. Though we start with some basic sort of simple steps, now it is now evolving to various other aspects. So not only mindfulness, now you are getting to the wisdom aspect. Now we are improving the concentration. So different other, say, spiritual components, spiritual qualities are now sort of collaborating each other and popping up, developing. So as a group, that's why, say, when it is coming to the faculties, indriya, you recognize, okay, there is something called saddha, say faith. There is something called virya, effort. There is something called mindfulness, sati. There is something called concentration, samadhi. There is something called, say, wisdom, panya. So likewise, now you can clearly recognize, so these are all different spiritual qualities that we are developing. So the clear comprehension has more contribution towards the wisdom.
Question number, this is 7 of 10, is a theory question. What's the difference between sila and adisila as referred to by Venerable Dhammajivan often? I don't know that right.
Actually, when suppose you are observing 5 precepts, then for you 8 precepts is an adisila. If you are observing 8 precepts, say 10 precepts is an adisila. If you are observing 10 precepts, say Samanera Dasa Sila is an Adisila. Then Patimokka Sila, that is the Bhikkhu Sila, is an Adisila. So that is one interpretation. And on the other hand, Adisila Sikha typically refers that you have a sort of attitude of maintaining Sila, targeting Nibbana. Now, one can develop or one can maintain, one can protect Sila, targeting various other goals. Say you want to become a millionaire on next life, free from all troubles. So one can protect protect sila targeting that. Say you want to be a celestial being, a deva, powerful deva on next life, and now you are protecting sila targeting that. So that is one way of protecting sila. But Buddha doesn't recommend it. But adisila means that your goal is Nibbana. So you are protecting sila as a sort of supporting condition to achieve Nibbana or to reach Nibbana. So then we call it a kind of adisila sikha, where you have a proper direction, proper orientation to your observing of precepts.
Question number 8 of 10. It's a general question. Venerable Bhante, I started orienting myself with the teaching and the mindfulness practice about 6 months ago. I have not yet reached a satisfactory level of sustained mindfulness in sitting or walking, but I am able to be mindful in daily activities. I understand that I have a very long way to go. Although I maintain a journal, I am yet to present a reflection report to you. Please advise how I should develop Shraddha or faith, as I think this is a missing aspect that I need to put effort into. I do listen to the Dhamma talks presented by the Venerable Sirs from Nisarnamaniya and try to read related material. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, it's a slow process. I mean, we need to have a lot of patience in developing, and don't think that even though now I am talking to you that I, say, come to at least some amount of understanding within a day or two. It's a years of practice. So therefore, don't worry. It takes long time. It's very much like growing a tree. If the tree is a massive tree, so it may take many years to grow. But if it's a sort of a shallow or kind of a weak tree, then within, say, a couple of months, it may grow, but it is not strong. But on the other hand, if you consider a very huge, very powerful or very strong tree, So it definitely take long, long time to grow. So similarly, if it is taking long time, maybe you have a long path to grow. And you have a long way to go. And a lot of potential is available. So take it positively. Actually, I, as a young monk, I asked the same question from my teacher. I was in a different monastery before coming to Mithirigala. And I was trying my best, trying so hard. And when compared to the other monks, I was a slow runner. So I complained to my teacher, Bante, I am trying my best, but still while others, the newcomers, are achieving this and that, say various samadhi, but I still my mind is distracted. So he gave me the same simile. So basically, if it is a very strong tree, it will take years to grow, but if it is a weak tree, it may quickly grow. So therefore, don't discourage if you are the others are able to quickly grow your mindfulness. This is just an encouragement for the other people who are the slow runners. So slow runners can run a long path. You know the simile of the marathon. It is not like a 200 meters or 100 meters race, but this practice is very much like a marathon. So you are maintaining some speed, but it's a kind of a slow speed, kind of a maintainable, sustainable speed. So simply continue the practice, continue your daily practice. Don't expect much results. Too much expectations are detrimental to the practice. Too much expectations are kind of a burden to the practice. So rather than simply continue your practice, like you are daily taking your meals, like you are daily having your bath, and daily have your sitting, daily have your walk. Simple as that.
Question number 9 of 10. This is day-to-day activities. I meditated yesterday and got calm, but had much trouble falling asleep. Does this mean my calm mind brought out the feeling of agitation from the storage of my consciousness? That's the end.
Typically, if you are able to have a good meditation, that actually helps you to have a good sleep. But on the other hand, if something went wrong, or you had a bad dream, maybe the temperature changed while you are sleeping, many conditions actually affect our sleeping. So therefore, that could be one reason. Maybe your body temperature change. Likewise, there are so many other causes contributing to our sleep. So it is not that when your mind went through a good meditation that was affecting the sleeping. But on the other hand, if various other factors are present, so it can affect your sleeping. But anyway, these are minor issues. Don't take too seriously. Yeah.
Question number 10. This is actually another one after this. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, I found I have a lot of distractions in the mind while I was doing sitting practice due to noise, thinking of the mind, etc. With all distractions, I continue the practice. I find my body is crooked, having flu-type symptoms. Is it okay to do the sitting practice while your body is sick? That's the end.
Can you repeat the last sentence, Chatur?
I find my body is crooked or sick today, having flu-like symptoms. Is it okay to do the sitting practice while your body is sick? Thank you. That's the end.
Yeah. You can do sitting, but don't exert too much effort. Say, because when you are sick, the body is weak. And if you are going through some effortful posture, then it is difficult. Because it is consuming a lot of energy. Actually, when we are quite well, we can easily maintain our posture. We can easily sit straight. But this straight sitting posture consumes fair amount of energy. when you are weak, when you are ill, so you have less energy, and if you are trying to maintain that posture, it is sort of too much energy consumption. So rather you can have a very comfortable chair, lean to a chair, maybe have a kind of lying down posture, so that you are saving your energy, and then you can continue the practice. So that is comfortable, that is well and good. Yeah.
This is actually a continuation from question 8 earlier. That was a question about how to develop faith to help with meditation. That's the end.
Yeah, faith is where, even though we don't yet have experienced various results, to continue our practice, we need to have a lot of faith. Say, suppose someone is telling, okay, I had this samadhi, that samadhi, I had jhana, but you have nothing. At that time, sometimes we fall, we disappoint, we discourage. But at that time, is a time where you need a lot of effort and the faith. So if you know that you are doing it honestly, if you know that you are doing it properly, then the daily practice, you can continue with a lot of faith. One day I may succeed. One day the results may come. So that kind of faith is quite necessary. And the faith related to the Buddha. And Buddha was able to continue his practice and was able to be free from samsara. And now he is trying to guide us. So we believe him. Even though I am not yet not yet able to see any sort of good results, still I believe him. I trust him as a teacher, as a leader, and again his teaching. So slowly, as we continue our practice, minor results going to appear, and then more results, more milestones. So that actually builds a lot of confidence. And when we are analyzing or when we are going through certain suttas, then we understand, okay, in this sutta, this is mentioned like this. Okay, I also now experience that. It is not that I am now believing. It is not that merely I am trusting someone, but rather I myself experience it. Now this has become an experiential knowledge, which we can map with the Buddha's teaching. Now you got a lot of faith. So that is how the typical saddha has different aspects. First, someone can simply have amulika saddha, where kind of baseless kind of faith, kind of blind faith, and that is not recommended. On the other hand, one can have the faith which is factual, and that is a good one. And then you continue with that, and later the faith become somewhat inbuilt kind of one. Because now it is not necessary to blindly believe or simply to trust. Rather, you yourself have experienced it. So you are very much sure about the teaching, because you yourself have experienced it. So this kind of a change happens in the faith. So having good faith is necessary. Otherwise, there are many obstacles in our path. There are many sort of disturbance can come in our path. If you don't have faith, so you might drop the practice. You might simply give up the practice. But when you have a lot of faith, so you are sort of having kind of a devotion towards the Buddha. You have some sort of inner connectivity with the Buddha, with the teaching. Even when things go wrong, even when things are happening onto the other side, even when, say, you are not getting enough results, or when you are going through a lot of difficulties, still you maintain the faith. So likewise, faith has very good effects. Yeah, I think that's the end of the questions, right?
Sorry, Bhante, there's one more. Do we have time?
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, last question. This is question number 11, day-to-day activities. We would like some advice about how to do a mindful conversation with Metta. Many thanks, Bhante.
Yeah. So, yeah, mindful conversation is little difficult at the beginning, because when we are in a conversation, when we are talking, a fair amount of involvement is there. So we are even though it is quickly happening, we are thinking, and then we are sort of talking the same facts. So many activities happening very in quick succession. So, and again, when you are talking to someone, you have to recognize his facial movements and his sort of moods and his reactions, and again what is what he is talking, and likewise it's a kind of a complicated process. So therefore it could be difficult to be mindful in a conversation at our early stages. But on the other hand, as our mindfulness grows, so it expands. It is not limited to, say, your body. Now you can sort of have a kind of expanding mindfulness. Now you are aware of what is happening to another person. So you can feel someone's feelings in a way. You can recognize his facial expressions. You can recognize how he is reacting. And whether he is in a good mood or whether he is in a bad mood. So therefore this is called empathy, where you can sort of have the similar kind of a feeling of another person. So if he's going through a bad mood or if going through a bad time, so you have kind of a vibration, kind of an empathy towards that person. So likewise, mindfulness is broadening and developing such skills, and definitely not within a day, and it may take long time. So these things are possible, and they are improving, they are sort of changing, increasing, and we simply have to continue the practice. And as you have mentioned, day-to-day practice especially. So more and more we are be mindful about day-to-day activities, then it is diversifying. The mindfulness is now diversifying, opening up to various other domains, and as a result you can sort of be mindful even during a conversation. Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante. That was the last question. So yes. I'll just sum up for today.
Yeah.
We actually had we've done well with the time. We had 11 questions today, and we haven't gone too much over time. And it was really good because we had a couple of questions come in regarding the discussion. And also, I think there was a lot of probing questions about mindfulness in day-to-day activities and sort of general questions that happen, I guess, outside of your practice, which was really good. So with that, I'd like to sort of sum up and thank Bhante for giving up his valuable time to help maintain this session, and also pass merits to Bhante, and also for the people seen and unseen, helping organize and continuing on with this session. And most of all, to the people who participated, because without you, this session wouldn't happen. So with that, I'd like to sum up. Teruvan Sannai. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Yeah, thank you very much for participation. Teruvan Sannai. Sadhu, sadhu.